Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Put in place, the benefits of those things are going to be seen in 2 years, in 4 years. And so we are handing off the strongest economy in history to the next administration. And the hope is that, there will be continued investments in that way.
So when you listen to the acting labor secretary saying they're handing off the strongest economy in history to Donald Trump, how do we feel about that? Are you feeling that in your own personal situation? A lot of people voted according to a disagreement with that statement. Let's get directly to our next guest. Steve Moore is with us, a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation and advisor to President Trump and his book, The Trump Economic Miracle and the Plan to Unleash Prosperity Again, which makes me think that maybe there's some work, some improvement to be done. Steve, welcome back. Happy holiday season to you. What do you think about that statement?
You too. Well, I haven't been able to stop smiling for the last month. So, and, you know, by the way, I think there is some truth to what the labor secretary is saying. I mean, people are really upbeat now. I mean, people are so confident. They are feeling optimistic. People are happy that this change is coming. And even, I don't know if you've noticed this, Annie, but even my Democratic friends are feeling optimistic about things, you know. And did you see Trump has the highest approval rating he's ever had right now? It's amazing. So change is coming. This past administration was fairly disastrous. I think they will go down in history. In fact, I was just doing an interview with a reporter, and I said, you know, they were asking me about, you know, Biden's legacy, and it will be the three D's, debt, deficits, and declining incomes. And so it is not a healthy economy, but I think it's going to get healthy really fast. And I'm really optimistic about the things that we're going to do. We're going to cut taxes. We're going to produce more American energy. We're going to deregulate the economy. We're going to get that border secure. Tom Homan, do you know Tom Homan? He's the border czar who is actually going to be a border czar. But he's ready to go. He's already, you know, it's amazing. It's only a month since the election. He hasn't even been confirmed yet. He's been to the border about 10 times. How many times did Kamala Harris go to the border?
Yeah.
Maybe once?
Yeah. As evidence is your non-border czar statement there.
Yeah. So this is, you know, it is preposterous for the labor secretary to say that this is a strong economy. It's an economy that has seen people lose income, lose faith in the country, and that's why they overwhelmingly voted for change. And it's coming. Change is coming. Great America, it's as Reagan would say, it's morning in America.
Yes, and it's wonderful. Like you, so many people right now, you just have a little extra pep in your step, a little extra smile to walk around with. Every time I remember Trump won, it is like Christmas morning. I wanted to ask you mentioned some other big concerns that Donald Trump needs to address on day one of taking the oath of office on January 20th. You advise on tax policy, you advise on economic policy all the time, but how much do these other issues, you mentioned the border, you know, other things out there, how much does Donald Trump's thumbprint on the whole wide variety of policies that he needs to confront, how much of that does come back to affect the American economy?
Well, you know, the issue now is going to be what are his top priorities, you know, because, there's about 100 things he wants to do, but he has to prioritize them. And I think the tax cut is going to be, you know, making sure that we get that done. And so that Americans don't feel a big because remember, if we don't get that done, people are going to face a gigantic tax increase, you know, this year.
The extension of that.
The do nothing option is not an option. So that'll be a top priority. We can start drilling through executive orders right away. We can pull America out of some of these un-America treaties like the Paris Climate Accord. So it'll need, and I've been around, you know, the folks at the transition. I mean, everybody's just chomping at the bit to get going here. I mean, Trump especially. I mean, he cannot wait to January 20. He's like a kid waiting for Christmas. You know, he just can't wait to get the economy, you know, back going. And it's really interesting. There was a, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times today, a big story about how angry a lot of liberals are because they feel like, you know, Biden's just letting Trump essentially act as president, you know, a month before he's actually sworn in as president. But it's going to be, look, and there's going to be a bump on the roads. You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I remember when Reagan was elected president, you know, the first year he was in office, we had a bad recession that he had to deal with. So, you know, it takes some time to get things back in order. And let's face it, we added so much money to our debt. You know, it's going to take years to get that, drain that out of the system.
Yeah. They haven't had problems with Joe Biden letting other people run the country. I guess they just have a problem with the other person in America decided to have in that position take over. I wanted to ask you about Trump's cabinet picks, specifically ones that really have an ability to affect economic policy. If we're talking about the Treasury Secretary, OMB, Commerce, Labor, all of these. Yeah. How do you feel about Donald Trump's picks so far in his economic portions of his cabinet?
Well, it's the A-team. No question about it. Scott Bessent is fantastic. He's a good friend of mine. He's going to be the Treasury Secretary and going to get the tax bill done. And my friend Kevin Hassett will be running the economic office. And, you know, then you've got, let's see, who's the labor? Oh, the labor secretary, not so.
Chavez Durimer.
Yeah, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
Okay.
And then, but the Commerce Secretary is going to, who is the Commerce Secretary?
Lutnick.
Oh, yeah, Lutnick is fine. And you know, we've got, so it's a great team of people. And, you know, the people who are working with him in the Oval Office, you know, just spectacular. And, you know, I'm excited about this, but I really do think we can see. And, oh, I forgot to mention, you know, the most, one of the most important things is the Doge. Beware of the Doge, as they say. And that is, you know, what Vivek and Elon are doing, and I, you know, I'm helping them a little bit. I hope that we can save hundreds of billions of dollars to bring down our debt and just get rid of the waste and the inefficiency and the duplication. And you know, there's hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud payments. Let's get that money back.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, I'm glad you brought up Doge. I just think it's so funny that a meme has now become like maybe the thing that will save the country. But I heard Vivek Ramaswamy say, you know, there are going to be people who are going to lose their government jobs out of this. But he said something that I think you might be able to speak to. He said, I'm hoping that these people can get out of government work and find even more success in the private sector. What is he talking about when he says that?
Well, when you're doing something, you know, look, a lot of government employees are just paper pushing right now, you know, and I'm not here to demean public employees, but a lot of the jobs are just, you know, just meaningless jobs. And, you know, nobody really wants to. And I live in the swamp. I know people work for the government, and it's not that fulfilling. It really isn't, because you're not really accomplishing much. So you go into a private business, you get things done, you're accomplishing things, you're making a difference in people's lives. That, you know, I agree with that. And by the way, we've got 90% of the federal employees aren't even working in the office full time.
And we're heating those buildings, we're protecting those buildings and spending a ton of money to do that.
Let's sell them off. Sell them off.
Last question before we let you go. We know you only have about a minute left here. You know, I always talk about, we're in St. Louis. Chicago is driving my state of Illinois. Are these economic policies at a federal level going to help even those people in blue cities and blue states?
Well, yeah, I mean, but yes, but, you know, because the macro economy affects everyone. But, you know, you've got poor, when you got poor leadership in these cities, like what's happening in Chicago is so tragic. I mean, it's just terrible leadership. It just drags down a place. And, you know, I think you can make an argument that Brandon Johnson is the worst mayor in America.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, and I love, you know this, I love Chicago. It's where I grew up, a world-class city, but I just see it deteriorating. The schools are terrible. There are people being shot. You know, everything's being blamed on racism. You know, and it's the fact that you've just got poor governance there. But yeah, look, the macro situation for all the states is going to improve radically, and I think it's going to happen quickly.
Oh, well, we're looking forward to it. Steve Moore, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it. Keep smiling. We'll talk to you again in a week or so.
Thanks, Annie.
Take care. Bye-bye. Steve Moore is a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation and economic advisor to President-elect Donald J. Trump. He is also author of the book The Trump Economic Miracle and the Plan to Unleash Prosperity Again. We had a limited amount of time with him there, and Ender asked the question about tariffs. I've probably had, and I know a minimum of two conversations with him since tariffs has been, I think it's been since the election, where I've asked him about that. And if you want to find that easily, you can go to anniefryshow.com/podcast. The playlist is there where you can listen to all of our podcasts, or just search the podcast if you are a podcast consumer. I think we live in a, especially here with News Talk Radio, or with Talk Radio, or whatever we're supposed to call ourselves now, we have an audience that is super, super plugged into podcasts. But we also have an audience that is like, I've been listening to the radio forever and I get what I need there. If you're not really a podcast person, if you go to anniefryshow.com/podcast, you can just click a player and play it. And you don't have to go through like, how do I subscribe? Where do they go? What do I do to listen? But we have talked with Steve Moore quite a bit about tariffs, and he will always say, and if I would have asked him that here again today in this conversation about the tariffs, he'd say, Annie, you know, I'm a free trade guy. He's not Mr., you know, fist pounding on the table, tariff, 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 tariff. But Kristen Welker in that interview with Donald Trump on Meet the Press this past weekend asked about that. And, you know, Donald Trump says tariff is a beautiful word. Mm-hmm. He loves it. He loves it as a negotiating tool. But he also, it was one of the things that impressed me the most out of that interview. How much of that did you consume?
Half of it, maybe.
But in bites or in full?
Both.
Okay. So there's one point where she's talking about tariffs and she's like, you know, a lot of people are saying this is going to, are you prepared to have put tariffs into play here? And then the American people are going to have to pay. A lot of her questions are statements.
Yeah.
And then, but I thought she was, I'm going to give her just an inch of credit here and say that she pushed in a way that I think that a respectful people first press should ask questions and push back and make elected leaders explain themselves. And I thought she did a really good job of it. We get really wrapped up regularly in the idea that they don't do it for the other side. But I would rather see, if you just take the Meet the Press interview with Kristen Welker, I would rather see that be the standard bearer of journalism in America, where she asks questions like that from Donald Trump and allows him to answer and push back and correct where he needs be. And she asks follow-up questions. I would rather that be the standard and then have that be applied to the Joe Bidens of the world and the Kamala Harrises of the world. I don't want the media and the press to treat Donald Trump the way they treated Joe Biden, because they were advocates. The press is supposed to be for us. We don't want the press to be for the Republicans. We want them to be for the people, because that's the only way Republicans are going to be able to hold the Republican Party accountable, is if we have people willing to ask questions of these elected officials, or those who want to be elected officials, where they have to actually answer to us. But on the tariff thing, Ryan, he said she was pushing back like, this is going to make costs go super, super high. He goes, well, that's not true. You're missing a part of the story. And then he goes into a very specific, he's like, Ohio, Whirlpool, because she made the conversation about people are going to have to pay more for their laundry machines and so on and so forth. He goes, Whirlpool in Ohio was going out of business. They were going bankrupt. China and South Korea were dumping washing machines into our country for next to nothing. It's putting Whirlpool out of the business. Whirlpool became a profitable, successful company, because basically what he's saying is he's even the playing field. And he goes, we saved all of those jobs. We saved all of those American jobs. And we have quality products coming out of Whirlpool. We gave a very specific, detailed response.
Yeah.
To Kristen Welker going, trying to freak everybody out, going, costs are going to go up on everything.
Yeah, it's such a fine conversation to have, in that there are a lot of points to it. And one of the biggest ones is that Donald Trump uses tariffs not just for economic reasons. He uses them as threats.
Yeah.
He uses them to get things done in other ways, because the economy of this country is the biggest in the world, and he knows that. And so when he uses tariffs, a lot of times he threatens them and never has to use them. And then when he does, there are other tangible benefits to using them that he brought up in that instance that don't get talked about. So is there a concern that it could raise price? If he were to do unilateral tariffs across everything like he says, yeah, that would be a concern. But of course, that's not the way it's going to play out.
You're welcome to stay in for this next conversation if you so choose, because Congressman Mike Bost is going to be on with us. And
great.
Brad, my understanding is that he was in the meeting
yes.
with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yes.
Talking
yeah, he
about
was in there.
Doge. Is it not the funniest thing ever that Doge is just a word we use now for government?
For government cutting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, just like, I don't even... Is it crypto? Is it
so,
what is it?
So Doge started out as a dog meme. It's like a Shiba Inu or whatever dog, and they would just put it on there, and they just said Doge, D-O-G-E, and it became wildly.
Why?
Because the internet is weird. This isn't that like the Wild West days of the internet.
But was it an Elon Musk thing?
And then Elon Musk took that and turned it into a crypto coin.
So no, but the meme existed.
The meme existed.
This Doge dog existed.
Yes.
Elon Musk liked it.
Liked it. Yeah.
Turned it into a thing.
Dogecoin. Yes.
A Dogecoin.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
You don't have to. It doesn't matter.
Why is this not a Scooter's Black Tea coin?
Yeah. Hey, you can
do that.
Can
I sell this for $50 million like the Tua girl?
You can. You might need to get Scooters involved to call it the Scooter's Black Tea coin.
Man, I'm trying.
But...
Go to Scooters and tell him Annie sent you.
Or
do me a favor.
Google Black Tea coin.
Yeah.
And we created that. That's ours now.
It's probably racist.
Yeah, right.
It's probably how we get canceled.
Right. People go, they didn't even know they were saying this.
I just said it because it was the first thing in front of my face, and it was either that or mouse. So
well, how about this one? Tiny cup coin.
Tiny cup coin.
It's my tiny cup.
Dude, if we can make it happen, I don't get it.
It's got a nice ring to it.
I don't get it. Selling like digital images and stuff.
You don't
like,
have to get.
Oh, I don't.
You can just be the public face for the coin that goes up to a billion and then shoots down to zero, because that's the plan.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Congressman Mike Bost on his meeting with Vivek and Elon Musk. The Congress met with them, and there are. I'm going to ask him specifically, like, is this going to be a bipartisan effort for real? For real? Our friend Congressman Mike Bost next. Don't go.
28-99. Can it be done?
We certainly hope so. We want to be willing partners in that. And we have a new ability to do this now. Remember, the Supreme Court overturned the Chevron doctrine,
right?
That's a game-changing kind of situation. Not in my lifetime.
Yes.
But we had the opportunity to go in and really take back control from the administrative state. For a long time, they've been acting as judge, jury, and executioner on the rules that they make on industries and small business owners and the rest. So we have the ingredients. We have the conditions right now to actually be able to make really dramatic change. And
want to take government
428 agencies down to 99. Are you kidding me? That is quite a dramatic cut. And that's what Doge is looking to do with all of those dollars that the federal government is spending from you. Well, let's talk to somebody who was there, was able to take part in this conversation. It's great to have you back on the show, Congressman Bost. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me on.
You're the congressman for Illinois' 12th District. You're the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. So you do definitely have an interest in how money is spent on behalf of the American people. Let us know what you think of the meeting, the Doge meeting.
Well, first off, so many times in government that I've been involved, everybody says it ought to be run more like a business. Well, how better than just to bring in two people that have been very, very, very successful in business. And now understand that they're an advisory board the way it is right now. But if they put it out in the public and then we can't do it, then we better be able to explain why we can't do it. So it gives an opportunity for us to springboard to make those reductions, because it's very, very tough. Politically, people will want to try to put pressure one way or another, depending on what the agency is or everything that we're trying to do. We're coming up with some really unique ideas, I think, some things that are sensible. Right now, since COVID went away, unfortunately, we still have office buildings that nobody's showing up to.
Hmm.
So then the question is, are you doing your job if you're not showing up? And if you're doing it from home, then why do we have a building that we're paying a lease on? Where can we save money there? What programs, regardless of what agency is in, that's in that we're looking for, are successful, are not successful, or just been an opportunity to shuffle money around and keep people employed as federal agents, federal government workforce? And, you know, I mean, the rumors have been out there for years about those post office jobs. Not at your local post office, but they only go to the post office, pick up their check, and go home. So, you know, those are the type of things we've got to look at and try to thin down. And I think going through it with a fine-tooth comb with this group, we will be able to save more than we've ever seen before.
Well, it's very fascinating to watch this take shape. We're speaking with Congressman Mike Bost, Illinois' 12th District Representative in the House of Representatives. I'm looking here in that conversation with Speaker Johnson and Martha McCallum, 428 agencies down to 99 agencies. One of the conversations we've had on this show is, I wonder how much government can be cut before the American taxpayer even notices that government has been cut.
True. When we say we're going to have a government shutdown, and I hate those. I don't think they're wise at all. But when we have the government shutdown, the first day is always the best day of a government shutdown, because it takes quite some time to start reaching the average Joe with a government shutdown. Now, if you are in the center of government, that government shutdown affects you pretty quickly. But then there's the question of, just right there, what are the agencies that don't really do anything, or they're created just to have an agency? There's one of the big talks is the Department of Education. And you got to remember that we didn't have a Department of Education in the United States until Jimmy Carter made a deal with the teachers unions. And now, was there certain elements of the government that dealt with education? There was, but there was not a Department of Education. And it doesn't have a real good history, regardless of whether it's a Republican or Democrat, as you go through. Why is that? It's because the states do it better and the locals do it better. So just having some agency in D.C. to give recommendations, to try to think that if you're educating a child in New York is the same thing as educating a child in O'Fallon.
Yeah.
It's just not. Okay. And so these are the type of things we need to look at and become sensibly, well, understand that the taxpayers. Now, let me tell you, we're going to make sure that we do the things that according to the Constitution, we're supposed to do. One, we have to provide for a national defense. Okay. Wisely provide for national defense. Two, I believe with that, then we need to take care of our veterans wisely. Not bureaucrats, but veterans. There's a difference, okay? Three, another agency that's out there, another thing we have to do by the Constitution is control our borders. So those are the things that you can see that we need to protect. Other than that, interstate commerce, it's required under the Constitution. So you look at that. There's a very few agencies that are actually supposed to be ran by the federal government. They're supposed to be ran by the states and local governments.
Congressman Bost, this is Ryan Wiggins. As I understand it, DOGE working with Congress is a great thing, because we talked last time about how they need, anything spending related. They're going to need to work with you guys, which is why you're talking to them. But concerning personnel, we keep hearing that they're going to slash agencies and get rid of people. Is that something that the president, either through DOGE or with a stroke of a pen, can do on his own? Or is that something he also needs to talk to Congress about?
Yeah, there's some he can do, or they can do on their own. First off, they can't do it. They can advise either the administration or Congress to do it. Now, understand, this is kind of like a blue ribbon task force with a little more, it has the media power, okay? So, but it's still, Congress has the power of the purse. So if you're going to reduce agencies, cut personnel, everything like that, there are certain administrative rules that the president can do, but many things are going to be required of Congress and individual committees that have oversight over each one of these agencies that might need to be reduced, line items taken out, programs changed or gotten rid of. The list goes on and on.
We're speaking with Congressman Mike Bost right now. Here he is representing the Illinois 12th District, and he is also the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. I'm wondering, Congressman, you work with the veterans, of course, maybe on that level, but also on a broader level. DOGE needs to happen in order to reduce government spending. Is there a place that has been neglected significantly where you see government spending making a remarkable increase with this next Congress?
Well, what I see us not markable increases, I see that we'll make the investment in the border, like I said. I believe that we're going to wisely check over the Department of Defense and the VA. Now, let me explain this so that your listeners don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Not reducing any benefits for the veterans, giving them the quality medical and or veteran services that were guaranteed to them and owed to them because of their time of service. Now, the advantage that also we have is we don't have a administration that wants to block us from getting rid of bureaucracy. And the thing is, the choice for Doug Collins for the secretary and the Senate, I hope, approves very quickly, because he and I will be working hand in hand, going through line item together along with Doge, and not reducing, once again, not reducing benefits, but sure reducing over a tremendous amount of waste that does exist in the VA and direct it to the areas where the veterans are.
Another question we have here from somebody who's listening to us here in the St. Louis area says, well, not a question, it's a statement. I would like your reaction to it. When Doge cuts Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, people will notice. Your thoughts?
Here's my statement on that. That person that just said that was probably a Democrat, because that's the same line Democrats always use when Republicans get in power. First off, Republicans have never cut Social Security or Medicare. I tell you who did cut Medicare. Barack Obama, when he created Obamacare, that is the first time there was ever cuts to any of those services. Now, here's the real statement, though. Do we need to work together in a bipartisan manner to figure out the long term for both of those programs? Because here's the reality. Right now, the actuarials that were put in place when Social Security and Medicare were put in place, the average life expectancy was like 58 years old, 59 years old, which means you were paying in, but you were going to draw. Well, that isn't the case anymore. Now it's like 74 years old, 75, and it's increasing all the time. So what's happening is we're spending more money than we're bringing in, and we put people on Social Security that were never paid in. So what we really need to do is start looking at the long-term cure, because I want to save it for those people who do right now, but I want to save it for my children and grandchildren. So there's a program out there that's sensible. But right now, what we're doing is, it's kind of like the guy that jumped off the top of the Empire State Building. And when he went by past the 30th floor, they said, "How's everything going?" He said, "Great so far." Because one of these days, it's going to hit the ground. And if we don't sit together and come together with some solution so that they can have those benefits, all of a sudden, one day, we're going to wake up and go, "Yep, it's over."
Congressman Boss, this is an interesting way of putting it. So just to be clear here, you're saying that the Republicans who now have the majority in the House, in the Senate, and they have the Oval Office, you're not looking to cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. You're looking to preserve it.
We are not looking to cut Medicare, Medicaid, or Medicare, or Social Security, which is all under our purview. We are wanting to preserve it, because this needs to be preserved to our children and grandchildren and their own. But it needs to be recalculated based on the fact that lives have changed. The amount of time that we work have changed. The amount of time we would spend. You can't draw from Social Security the amount of years that you pay in and then expect it to continue to work. Okay, it's got to be able to have enough time to collect interest.
Congressman Bost, is there anything bigger picture, since we're talking about that now, that you guys, either Doge is bringing to you or you're talking with them about, that really will significantly reduce national debt spending like we haven't seen before? Because we all agree on we need to get, you know, the funding for snails walking backwards on treadmills, right, and stuff like that. That right. Kind of stuff's great.
I do want to see that.
But okay, we won't cut that one.
But the shrimp running on a treadmill is pretty good.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is the stuff that makes the headlines with Rand Paul and everybody. But is there any big picture, like, no, we really need to address like some big issue spending stuff?
Sure. We need to make sure that, look, over 60% of our budget is those areas where it's mandatory spending. Okay. How do we bring the mandatory spending over to and or a place where we still remain mandatory, but make sure that spending is done wisely? The answer is yes, we can, but it's going to take a lot of work. Ooh. And I'm going to tell you, I'm willing to work. Trust me. But it is big. We can talk about the things that you were just talking about. And yes, we can. I don't believe that just in the non-mandatory, I want to work real hard. I don't see us getting the $2 trillion that they said we'd hit. I don't know how you do that on only the non-mandatory side.
Congressman Voss, before we let you go, we appreciate your time as you represent Illinois' 12th district right here on the east side within our listening area here in St. Louis. I've heard people maybe criticize a little bit the Musk, the Ramaswamy non-elected people who are coming in to make some very dramatic changes to our fiscal situation. At least that's the plan. How does this work? How do Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy function in the Democratic Republic that we have?
I'm glad you asked, because here's the reality. As I said, though it's a little stronger than a blue ribbon task force, it's an advisory board. The advisory board does not take the power of the administration nor the power of the Congress. It does not have the ability to handle the purse or the administration thereof. And so, therefore, everything that they give will be advice. Now, the advantage that they have is they have the media and the public's ear to, once they give the advice, if we can't do it, we're going to have to explain why.
Yeah. So the people of Illinois' 12th district still have their voice be heard through your representation.
You're still represented by a member of Congress, and you're going to continue to do that. We're not changing the Constitution in any way, shape, or form. We're just taking business advice.
Well, Congressman, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your transparency here. And we're going to look forward to following up with you as this very new way of looking at government spending. We're cutting. Wow. We've not had this discussion very much. We're excited to see where
it goes. It's a Christmas miracle.
Yes.
True. Thank you, Congressman. We'll talk to you
again. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Take care. A quick break. When we come back, let's get to the poll question, have a little discussion about this. The question we're asking you on the Annie Fry YouTube channel is, who should be deported? It's a big conversation. Just to sidestep that a little bit, and this was something that Donald Trump talked about in the Meet the Press interview with Kristen Welker. You know, when people talk about who should be pardoned with the January 6th situation, there's like, everybody should just pardon everybody. If you were there, you're pardoned. You got away with whatever you did. If you were good, you're get bad, whatever. Lump, pardon, moving on. Other people think you should do it surgically, look at each individual case. And other people think nobody should be pardoned. If you were there and you got in trouble, you got in trouble. On a much even more broad scale, with the immigration situation in our country and the encouragement of so many people to come here. Remember when Joe Biden said in the debate, didn't he say, come? Didn't he tell people to come across the southern border when he was trying to become the president in 2020? The policy of the Biden administration has encouraged people to flood across our southern border. Does that matter? Maybe it does to you. Maybe it doesn't to you. Who should be deported? On the Annie Fry YouTube channel, in the live chat of our current live broadcast, which you'll see if you pull up the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can answer every illegal immigrant. Get them out of here. If you're here illegally, you're gone. Doesn't matter your age, how long you've been here. If you came here illegally, you're gone. That's option number one. We have criminals. And I have in parentheses there something to the effect of other than illegal entry, because I know and I am of the mind that if you broke the law to come here, that is a criminal act. But there are people who came here who have been a contributing member of society since they've been here. They've paid taxes. That is the crime that they committed. I'm talking about those who have committed crimes other than the act of coming here illegally. It's the best. I thought about it for a long time. It's the best way I could sum it up. The third choice is your more recent immigrants. I didn't define what that time of recent is. It's up to you to determine what it is. Vote for that and leave a comment if you think that people who have come here more recently are those that we should deport. And the last one is you don't think that anyone should be deported. Leave them alone. America is for everybody. Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come vote. We have 342 votes on the poll so far, which is pretty impressive halfway through the show. But we need you to have your voice heard. Get on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote. We'll have that discussion with the crew when we come back. Don't go away. I'd open
somebody, pour me a drink. Somebody bum me a smoke.
It's time. What are you waiting on?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't even have my headphones on yet. Is Ethan standing here for this? No, he's gone.
Nah, I told him he couldn't.
I was gone making a lean cuisine for 2 minutes and you made decisions like that?
I was like, go get Annie and stall her.
Knock her over, tackle her. I need 10 minutes to say some things. Our YouTube live chat poll for today is who should be deported. Ethan will be giving us those results at the end of the show. We got 361 votes so far today. That's fantastic. Great feedback. I'm curious to hear what y'all are going to comment about this, because this to me is going to be contentious politically. once things start going? Because I think that Donald Trump is not going to be as rigid as Republicans want him to be on this issue.
Yeah, I think that that interview he just did with Kristen Welker was almost him setting that up, because he was saying things that got a lot of headlines. If you saw the news this weekend, if you didn't see the whole interview, a lot of the headlines were about, oh, Donald Trump wants to deport anchor babies and dreamers and people that legally have status to be here. And so people said, well, he can't do that. Well, what he's doing is probably setting up a deal, I mean, in my opinion, that says, well, okay, we'll allow everybody in this whatever category, and I don't know what that'll be, to stay if we change the law for the future. But that's, to me, where he's going.
That's what a leader needs to do. You need to be willing to do things that you do need to be willing to compromise, but it has to be a good compromise. And people who are listening to him say something that seems anything less than rigid also need to remember the name Tom Homan. Tom Homan being the border czar, which is not something that has to go through any sort of senatorial confirmation process. He's the border czar. He's been put in charge of fixing our southern border, is saying we are absolutely opposed to separating families. They can all leave together. We won't stop them. And in that interview with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, Donald Trump, she was like, are you going to separate families to some extent? I don't remember how she specifically asked the question, but he's like, no, we don't ever want to do that. You might see families that say, you know, dad's going to go, but the rest of us are going to stay, so on and so forth. He goes, we don't want to separate families, but that'll be on them. And the situation is, yes, families will be separated, but it's their choice. And that is such a simple, basic concept. Why has nobody said that before?
It is amazing, isn't it?
Like, families don't have to be separated.
Right.
We'll facilitate families to be together, not here.
Right.
And Tom Homan has been very straightforward on that.
Yeah, that whole interview to me was, because people went, why is he going to Kristen Welker? Why is he doing Meet the Press? You know, I don't know if he's ever done that before.
She says, like, this is your first interview since you've been elected president. And his response is basically, you're welcome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is good for her for sure. But I really do believe that he said, okay, now's the time. It's into December. Now it's been a month. I'm going to sit down with a major mainstream outlet and start feeding some things out there that I want to be out there as priorities for my administration. Knowing he's art of the deal guy, he's probably not going to get everything he wants, but he's going to put some things out and say, here's the starting point for negotiations. Let's talk.
excuse me. Jackie says, if they didn't enter through a legal port of entry, every illegal alien needs to be deported. The current administration didn't follow the law, and neither did the aliens. Brad, what is your thought on this question? Who should be deported? Everybody, criminals, and we define criminals being outside of their illegal entry into the country, people who have just come here more recently, or nobody?
I think that, I mean, I'm of the mindset that everybody should be deported. I mean, if you are here and you're not supposed to be here, you have to go back. And this comes from this my mindset that it's not fair to the people that have tried to immigrate to the United States who are doing it the right way and who have done it the right way, the legal way. Whenever I say the right way, that's what I'm talking about, is the legal way. There are people out there that did everything. They incurred all the expenses that they needed to incur. They waited the time that they needed to wait. They got the sponsorships. They passed the citizenship tests and all of the stuff that they needed to do, and they came to the United States. It's not fair to them for you to say, well, yeah, but it's going to be hard to send them back, so we'll just let it slide this one time. I think you send as many back as you possibly can.
Quick Rick says, Ryan, I'm a hardliner on this deportation issue. I can't accept people who come to our nation breaking and entering, so to speak.
Yeah, that's, to me, the correct view. We can talk about dreamers. We can talk about people born here who they themselves didn't have any choice in the matter. But I don't think there should be some sort of expiration for people who say, well, they've been here for 25 years. Yes, they came here legally, but they've been here for a long time. I'm sorry. That doesn't count. The dreamers thing is a little bit different of an issue because they didn't make that decision. But to me, of these choices, you got to go with the first one, every illegal immigrant.
Libby Lou, who says all of the above, send Biden with him. I don't think that we can do that. That's not one of our options.
Unless we find something else illegal that he was doing, like maybe he wasn't a citizen this whole time.
How was he president? That's a whole can of worms.
Kurt says all illegal aliens. Ender said all illegals, plain and simple. I mean, this does seem, for a lot of people who are responding, to be cut and dry.
Yeah, And again, that's why I brought up the Trump sort of strategy here, is because it has to start being cut and dry. Now, if you get into the nuance of deal making and hey, we got to get some Democrats on board here because they don't have super majorities, so they probably will if they're going to change any laws. That's where you start, though.
The point that you were making about compromise, and that we were hearing about changing the system going forward. I'm always annoyed by the cop out from politicians on both sides of the aisle, where Republicans don't want to talk about the immigration issue because they say the border needs to be solved first. I agree with that statement, but it doesn't get us anywhere when you're not willing to talk about the immigration system, that the Democrats will say, we need to have we need to overhaul the entire immigration system so that people can come to this country, that it isn't so difficult. And they say that's the issue that needs to be focused on, and they don't address the border. Both systems, there is compromise to be had in putting those two conversations together, where we do overhaul the immigration system and we do actually stringently police the southern border. And Donald Trump is in a position to do that with putting Tom Homan to say, yeah, let's have this immigration conversation. And he can go on Meet the Press and talk to Kristen Welker about possibilities that might exist that people don't think that he would be in favor of. Wow, Tom Homan is doing Tom Homan things on the southern border. This is leadership. And I'm really excited to see what happens next. You come vote as well on the Annie Frye YouTube channel. Let's get over 400 votes before the end of the show here. Who should be deported? We want to know what you think. Annie Frye YouTube live chat poll. We'll be right back.